Hey. Aloha, this is Philip. Hey, we all know how high school sports can really get kids to stay in school. Now, how does alternative ed figure into all that? We delve into that.
This is the Educational Triage Podcast. Welcome. We invite you to come along with us on an exploration of interviews, issues, and other exciting and relevant topics in education, especially alternative education. They say alternative education is a laboratory for mainstream education. Why? Well, join us every week and listen in as Philip Summers,
aloha,
and I, Tony Hunt, jump in feet first to discuss issues that may affect our classes, students, communities, as well as our teaching. Please subscribe if you enjoy and find relevance in what you experience here. And if you haven't left a quick review, please do. We appreciate your candor and insights so we can improve as we move forward. Now, let's see what's on board today.
And aloha, welcome to Educational Triage. We're talking about athletics and alternative ed. Bet you never thought about that very much. It's not as rare as you might think, and there's some great athletes there too. We welcome Tony Hunt.
Hey,
Tony.
Yo.
Oh, how can I describe you? Indescribable Tony Hunt. There it is.
I'll take it. I'll take it. Thank you.
I would. Oh, man. As you'll notice, it's the first time I've ever opened a show, so it's kind of interesting for me. You had such a good pattern. I was just like, I felt like Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson or something. But
gosh, shucks.
Yeah, I just go, like, used to laugh. That guy was a little bit patronizing, but hey, Johnny was Johnny. We loved him.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the alternative ed experience and how it can correlate to alternative ed, or I'm sorry, sports and high school sports.
Yes.
And we kind of looked into such like that. And I think it's kind of interesting. I wanted to kind of point out some of the odds. Everyone's playing high school sports and everyone thinks perhaps their son or daughter could play, you know, pro. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, the odds of playing just in college, making a college roster, is 8-1 for baseball. Right. For Division I, which is University of Oregon and those biggies, it's 43-1.
Right.
Yeah. Football's 33-1 at that level and 11-1 at the Division I and II levels.
Wow.
So yeah, so soccer, what, that's hard too.
I would think that would be even, isn't that higher?
Soccer is 108-1 of making a D1 and 12-1 of making a D2 or D3 college.
Yeah. Okay. What about the pros?
Because of the slots. The pros is insane. I mean, it's like to make a pro roster at baseball, remember, is 8-1 for just a kid playing Division 1, 2, or 3. 829-1. 829. There's only so many spots on a roster there. The NFL has kind of bigger rosters and it's 554-1. Yikes.
Yeah, so you gotta be really special in order to get there. But
yeah,
it's doable.
It's doable, but I wouldn't be thinking my future is resting on that, unless it might be resting on that. Yeah.
Right. And most of the people that I know that have made it professionally, they started young, but they also had talent and they had somebody in their lives who were able to work with that talent and help them build it out.
So, that's a great point.
And it's not just because they had raw talent that somebody suddenly saw. I mean, we can look at Rudy and we can say, look at him. Well, Rudy had chutzpah and he really had a ton of grit and he wasn't going to give up. But, you know, he played in one game and that was because he did have the grit and he did prove himself and he was out there and he was constantly there trying to prove himself. Now, he never really was part of the official roster.
Right.
But he did get what he dreamt of doing.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My kid played Division III baseball all 4 years of college.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very successful. And his whole reason for doing it was to continue to play baseball, because once you stop playing baseball, you don't play anymore. And he'd been playing since he was five. He's a catcher. Anyway, the camaraderie and the friendships that he developed and the way they supported each other academically and athletically was mm-hmm. priceless. I mean, friendships that'll last forever. And, you know, it's kind of forged in the fire of competition. So it's worthwhile to do that, get into college and do that. He learned to be a leader. He's one of the team captains, you know, in his senior year, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And he went through some hard times and came through it, you know, well. And that's mm-hmm. part of life too. So yeah, high school sports can offer that same kind of micro environment. The kids find a family, and that's really important. Well, that's one of the very big benefits of it.
But I think once, if we go down to the nitty gritty of these school sports, I mean, you have to, you start someplace and you always have to try out for a team, it seems. Unless you have an inside track. And even then, you still have to prove yourself, right? So you can go out for the freshman team or the JV team or something. And then there's also the club sports. So can you explain, first what the club sports are and how they're different than, say, let's say that we have Urbana High School.
Okay.
And a kid doesn't make the ninth grade soccer team, say, for the high school. And then they tell me that they're going to go play club sports. What does all that mean? How does all that figure in?
Well, first off, you're probably getting the sequence wrong on that. Especially soccer. It's club sports, and it's never been affiliated with schools. So soccer was one of the first sports that sort of played year round. And they competed for fields and they competed for kids' time a lot of times. And kids would join the club sport of soccer. Lacrosse is another club sport.
Okay.
Equestrian. There's actually equestrian teams that are club sports. And these are sports that are organized and run by clubs themselves and not by the school and the athletic director. And the athletic director at the high school is the football, basketball, baseball, softball, swimming, wrestling. The traditional high school sports are run by the school athletic director. So the clubs are sort of on the side. They do affiliate with the high school and they play for the high school, but that's an extracurricular sort of thing. So some people think the club will get them closer to a career than high school sports. Some people play both.
So let me get this straight then.
Yeah.
So when they have what they call club rush at the high schools, then mm-hmm. are those teams represented there?
No, they're already established. If you're in a club system, let's say you're in Futures Baseball, that's a club system. They already know who their players are and who's the best, and they are developing them.
So and if so I just by move the time in,
you get to, yeah.
If I just move into the area, how do I get involved in a club sport then? Because it sounds to me like it's already a loaded deal, right?
It is. You could be SOL. If you're not one of the established kids, unless you walk on and you just blow the socks off the coaches and they go, oh my gosh, you know, we got another like Ken Griffey or Shaquille O'Neal, you probably can't break into the club system. You can try out for the high school system, but the same thing applies there. They know who the kids are, so mm-hmm. you're kind of at a disadvantage.
Because they're usually networked community, right?
Yeah, it's a network community. My kid played since he was five. You know, he knew everybody and everybody knew him. And it was, you know, baseball communities like that. He knew people playing, you know, coaching college. You know, he was like in junior high school because he was taking camps and things. Yeah.
So what does that mean then for, so a newbie who just transfers into a school,
Right.
Are you saying then that they're kind of SOL where it comes to doing club sports or even high school sports? Because
they can.
As opposed to sports being fun for people to participate in, now right. they're getting almost extremely competitive rather than just being fun.
That's true. Everyone's looking to get an advantage or get better, you know, or develop sooner. And when that happens, entrepreneurs came in and started like training camps, and football did that. Soccer has always been sort of hard on time because they do it year round. They have even games year round.
And they have indoor fields.
And they have indoor facilities. Yeah. Futsal and things. Football was always, you know, the fall sport. It started in the summer, you know, you sweat, you drank a lot of water. You went into the fall and the winter and you played in the snow. And then you were done and you played your other sports. But now there's football camps in the spring for different positions, backfield, receivers, things like that. It's crazy and people will pay for it. And so if you're in the system, say a community, and all the kids know each other, unless you're phenomenally good, it's very difficult to step into that situation. However, it's not impossible. It's just, you're kind of not known.
Do the parks and recreation communities in those areas then, do they help take up for what I would call maybe the less privileged students?
That's true. Intramurals have disappeared from schools. Yeah.
So not colleges, the parks department. So I would ask whether or not the parks department for the community, whether or not those don't do a great deal of benefit for those.
Yes.
Okay.
I lived in a community where they had a parks department and they had a dodgeball league and they had a basketball league. Oh, I even coached girls basketball at the elementary fourth, fifth, and sixth level. So yeah, that's school sponsored. And then they go and play it at the middle school and then the high school. Basketball at that time, there were kids who took side stuff and developed. And I mean, there was always like LeBron James went right from high school to the pros, but he's like a prodigy. You know, people were talking about him when he was like 14. Kevin Love, another player that came from a community I lived in, he was breaking a backboard as a freshman in high school. It's just like,
really?
Anywhere he played, it's like, yes, sir. You know, you want him on your team. So, but it's that ordinary kid, maybe the kind of kid that is a kind of a alternative ed kid and they want to branch out and play some basketball. Maybe they're decent, you know, on a playground. That would be a kid that it would be hard to break in for unless they were phenomenally good.
See, I'm thinking of, part of me is also thinking about the kids who come from underprivileged segments of the community.
Yeah.
For whom playing a sport may be one of the only ways for them to get out of that. They believe that this is the only way for them to get out of that community and to break free and maybe find a different life and a different lifestyle so that they could feel successful or have more opportunities available to them. And I'm talking about, if you think about, I'm not sure if I'm remembering it right, but I think All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise. I'm thinking about the kids in October Sky, because remember, they needed to have that football scholarship in order to make it out of the coal mining town. I'm thinking about kids from the inner, what do we call that? From the inner streets of the community that need to play basketball, that are going to play basketball, because to them, that is liberating and that can get them going. So they really want to be able to play basketball. They really want to be able to do all these things. And so they're going to play. And it becomes really highly competitive for them. But they still have that sense of community around them. But without the money, they can't really participate, can they?
Well, that's true. It's that some of those examples you came up with were sort of movies made to be exemplary, but
yeah, I think that, that's
getting
part
out of the hood, but by sports has always been sort of, you know, I can make it by sports. But the truth is, we saw it. What was the in basketball? Shoot, there's only 12 guys on a roster in basketball, and there's only, I don't know, 32 teams or something. So there's only, there's only 200 active associated with basketball playing at the pro level, people walking around in this universe right now. It's a small club. As far as clubs go, there was actually this survey called the SEED survey. It's interesting. It's this, it's called the Student Educational Equity Development Survey, but it looked into students that didn't participate in extracurricular club activities and why. So this is a little bit more involved with extracurriculars in the state of Oregon, no less. And some of the questions they asked, at my school, I have the opportunity to create clubs and schedule activities. It was, you know, pretty much tied as far as those opportunities. And the participation itself, there's strong agreement, an agreement that they could participate in these activities and clubs. But when it comes to sports and the way they've sort of sectioned out, you know, athletes, you got to be pretty athletic to play on those good, those better teams. There's sort of a cut point. So when it comes to these stats, I suspect that, you know, there are opportunities for extracurricular slash sports activities would be, you know, limited to people who were athletic and actually wanted to play that sport itself.
And had the funds,
at least at the high school level.
And also had the funds to pay the participation fee, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a, there's also, if you look at the OSAA, the Oregon State Athletic Association rules on this thing, there has to be opportunity for scholarships, and there has to be opportunity for participation for all students, regardless of their student status. They can be homeschooled. As long as they go to the school in their district and in their area, and they, you know, fulfill all the qualifications of being on the team, the physical, you know, make the practices, make the games, be a good team member, the whole thing.
Okay.
So the OSAA has got rules down to be very inclusive, even if the kids like homeschooled and things like that. And there's a lot of effort to try to include kind of pretty much anybody and everybody. There's Title IX started that, and although other groups aren't, as far as like being male or female, that's the distinction with Title IX. I'm sorry. Title IX is a federal law that states that girls' facilities have to match boys' facilities. There can't be a disparate, there can't be a difference between the two, per se, as far as funding and support. And that was hard won. So it only includes girls' sports, but it also looks as if, you know, some research being done by the Multnomah Athletic Foundation, no less. Girls make up 44% of high school athletes, and boys are still, you know, the majority at 56%. So there's a lot of efforts.
There are very few. There are very few female football teams.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's
in high
true.
Schools. There's track and field. They participate in basketball. They have volleyball. Women do primarily have volleyball, whereas men don't. Men also have lacrosse. Women and men both do soccer.
Women have lacrosse too.
Right.
Yeah, that's side by side, yeah.
I'm going to, somebody prove me wrong, I'm going to say that women dominate in equestrian fields.
Gosh, you know, I can't say. I think so.
So, and I'm not sure about any of the other sports. Baseball for men, softball for
softball,
women, correct?
Yeah, softball for girls sports. And then there's, you know, girl swimmers. There's girl wrestlers.
But there are fewer female wrestlers than there are male wrestlers, so that they participate with the males.
That's interesting. I wonder if that's true. Yeah, it seems like it might be, although wrestling over at this one high school near me is big time. And they have a state champion girls wrestling team. They're quite proud of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're after it. They're good. And
that's awesome.
And there's also girls basketball is big. And women's NCAA basketball is becoming huge, apparently. Mm-hmm. I don't watch much of the basketball. But yeah, apparently women's basketball at the college level is pretty huge. There's some big stars there. And the WNBA is also a professional league all to its own.
So when we start talking about access, when we start talking about the seed survey,
right,
all this is going to be down in the notes for people to access. When we start looking at these things, on my first glance of looking them over and then going back over them, I see that there are sections of the high school community that say that they don't feel as though that they have access, as you said, to starting up a club or participating in a club.
There are a few.
And so that's about 50-50, right? And
it was, yeah, it was intramurals, basically. But,
right. And participation in sports. And so it's my big question as I was reading that was, how many of those students how many of them actually do feel powerless? And how many of them feel as though they might have some subsequent kind of power by saying that they do not have access? So, because they are not, there's a sense of belonging that happens. I can't remember which study it was that you sent me. Students who participate in sports or in the clubs, or after school, extracurriculars, intramurals, whatever, they have a greater sense of belonging in the schools. The students who belong to the alternative ed community tend to already be disenfranchised. And so
I think that's a fair assumption, yeah.
And although I've had a number of students who participate in soccer, in football, and in other extracurriculars, those tend to be in the minority for a goodly number. So I'm just wondering how many parents of alternative ed kids, how many program directors or teachers in alternative ed, how many schools with alternative programs actually advertise and promote extracurricular participation in order to help that? Because,
and how many students are not even interested at anything at the school level? Like you said, they're disenfranchised. They don't feel they belong. You know, I was looking at the stats as far as the underserved, and it runs right along alternative ed kids. You know, it's minority kids. Native Americans have, there's one stat that says Native Americans have a very high obesity rate. And their that's BMI directly, it's directly related to the society they live in and the lack of, being franchised. Yeah. They've been so disenfranchised for so long. The alt-ed kid, like you said, I think if they were a really good sports kid, even if they were alt-ed, they were taking alt-ed classes, they'd still be hooked into like the soccer team at the high school because that's their thing. I think it's very rare some kid as a sophomore goes, I think I'll go play soccer at the high school. I don't think they want to do anything at the high school, many of them.
Well, many of them have already been sort of shoved to the side by the high school. They've been told that they're less than.
Yeah, if they found this team to be on at the high school, that might have kept them there. Mm-hmm. But they didn't find it.
Right. But then you also have the alternative ed kids who simply needed to have a smaller venue in order to learn whatever it was that they were going to learn. Mm-hmm. But the greater community the greater educational district community snubs their nose at the alternative ed community and says that they are less than. I've had people in the athletic department demand from me some sort of semblance as to what kinds of grades are we giving the kids? Because we were given an edict that we could not grade or give the students any form of grade because there was something about the material that they felt that the material that the kids were learning was less than. And it's not less than in most circumstances. It's different from, it has more of a, I don't want to say remedial aspect to it, but what it does is it grabs the kid, it entrenches them in the material, and it brings them through it so that they have a better understanding of where they should be and how to move forward with that. And sometimes, because they're able to learn it more easily, people think it's simpler and that it's not as good and that it's not as challenging.
They didn't struggle the way I struggled, and it wasn't worthwhile. It's like, well, you know, interestingly enough, you're talking about that. There's actually an alternative education league. It's back east, and it's an alternative ed school that is geared toward the student athlete, and that flexibility of schedule for travel and training. And I don't know what the curriculum's like. I can't really get much information on it. I was just kind of fascinated to see it. It makes sense with all the people wanting to get into it and train kids early and develop them. And, you know, to be in a school that actually takes into consideration, you know, your athletics and your conditioning, because that's big time too. I mean, there's kids in high school that can bench press ungodly amounts of weight. It's, you know, they've just trained it. It's incredible. It's like 360, 300, what? It's like, what? And that's where your athletes come from anyway. You know, your best athletes, you know, just power-wise are probably in their 20s, early 20s, late 20s. Endurance-wise, it's the 30s. But
And you do have a lot of kids in the alternative programs, though, who have all kinds of raw talent who could do so much for the other teams. But because they are in alternative ed, they are seen as not being able to have the standards of academics that the Athletic Association for the States requires. And I'm going to put quotation marks on that because I have seen those rules bent for so many students in so many ways that it's a joke. I mean, you want to talk about corruption, it's there, because this way they can get their favorite kids in, and that kid is not doing well academically. So I do have to say that a lot of the data is skewed.
Yeah.
And that it's inaccurate simply for that very reason.
That's a good point. One of the drawbacks, of course, to high school sports is the performance, the pressure to perform, and the time it takes and the commitment. And if you're like the star quarterback, you know, you really feel like every snap, it's my team. I win or lose this. And as a kid, you can't disseminate that responsibility to your teammates. You just think it's me, me, me. And yeah, you're right. Academics can kind of slide. And, you know, the focus becomes the game on Friday night, not the test on Wednesday morning. And that's one of the drawbacks. Yeah.
Well, narcissism tends to be a teenage quality anyway. I mean, we went through it. I mean,
lack of self-awareness is completely normal.
Oh, completely. I mean, nobody is as sexy as I am when I'm 17, right?
I'm bulletproof. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But there are studies that have been done that demonstrate that students that are highly involved in extracurricular activities tend to be much better academically. Yeah. And they are perceived to also be much more, they hold far more self-confidence in themselves than other students. And maybe it's because they are involved in something where they are achieving, even if it's running or whatever it is, they're part of a team and they have those people that are supporting them doing that.
Yeah. It's almost self-exclusive, if you think about it. The alternative school and the alternative student don't really have the sports. They and the regular schools have those outlets for the kids. So naturally, the kids are invested in the school more because they're invested in the sports. But alternative ed doesn't really have any sports. I'm sure there's some maker teams possibly or some debate teams, but I don't think alternative programs can field a basketball or a football or a softball, volleyball team. I mean, yeah, things like that.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Some of my students, they were telling me, because their self-confidence was through the roof. Mm. And I was talking to them and I said, so maybe do you have any kind of physical outlet? Because I wanted to know. I mean, I thought, well, just because you're Latino doesn't mean that you're going to be out there playing soccer all the time. I mean, maybe there's something else that you're doing. And believe it or not, but I had just as many females as males tell me boxing.
Boxing.
And they went to the community center that was just outside of their community. It was on the other side. It was in the next, let's just say the next town over, but they didn't live that far away from it. And so they went there and they boxed and they had their own league of boxing.
Really? Now, there you go.
If I told my mama that I was going boxing, my mama probably would say, what? No.
No, you're not. Yeah.
Because she would be worried about injuries. And so can you speak to that? Because I know that football, parents have become so, what's the word, protective?
Protective. Because, and yet they're invested. It's interesting. They're protective, but they will, you know, some that are protective will let their kid play football. Did you know that the NFL is making a concerted effort to improve the equipment at the pro level and every level? Based upon like position and everything and the impacts they take and the whole appeal of football, they're pushing flag football to girls and elementary school and boys in the elementary school and middle school. They're trying to get the involvement in football together because of that, because there was such injuries just, and the CTE that these players were seen to have had post-mortem. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. So a lot of mothers and dads are saying, I don't want you playing football. It's a great thing for high school, you know, but you could seriously scramble your brains up or lose a knee or whatever, which is not an atypical story. So yeah, it's kind of a weird relationship. Some parents are still really wary of football, but football is the American game. Per se. We have a love affair with it. We watch it on TV. They've changed the rules on NFL. You can't like lay out receivers who are defenseless and things. You can't slam the quarterback to the ground when you get your hands on them. And there's a lot of guys living a lot longer because of that, but it's true. It's fascinating. As far as basketball goes, that's always been sort of a pickup sport, sort of grassroots. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some parents who are seriously, you know, training the kid to be the best basketball player. In the Midwest, it's pretty hot. But generally speaking, the kids teach each other on the playgrounds and then recess, and then they join leagues. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. And they really emulate the pros. Everyone's shooting up threes, even if you're like 4'2" and 80 pounds. I've seen that. The kid is launching threes. It's crazy. But yeah, those are organized sports and those are intramural sports, a lot of them. And I think most people who play basketball realize they're probably not going to play college or pro because there's only 12 guys on the roster, 15 maybe. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You know, like I just said, it just seems to correlate with the alternative ed student. Alternative ed students tend to be rock climbers. They tend to like skate. Some of them are really great boarders on the mountain. They're taking off to the mountain constantly in the winter. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the sports of the individual that attracts alternative ed kids. There's an eclectic group of people there. They do all kinds of different things. And also, I got to hand it to soccer, football for the rest of the world, but all it is a ball and feet.
Yeah.
And if you're used to playing it, it's just like, you got a ball? Yeah, okay, let's go. I mean, yeah. I've seen guys play in a room.
It's yeah. The world's basketball for a pickup game.
That's it. All you need is a basketball and feet, or a soccer ball and feet. Yeah, it's great. You know, there's no equipment, there's no strategy, timeout. You know, no, just, you don't want to kick the ball, just don't go after it. It's kind of crazy cool. But yeah, and soccer's really big at the youth level, just for getting kids out and running.
Yeah.
It's the little league of girls' sports, really. I think every girl's played soccer at some point in their elementary school career.
Oh, my nieces and my nephew, they all played soccer all the way through into mm-hmm. high school. One of my nieces was an all-star in soccer in college.
Hey.
And then she also, she's a principal now of a major urban high school. But she also played tennis, and her sister, who went to another university, played tennis. And so the big deal was to see if we could find out when they were going up against each other. Because it was a bloodbath.
That would be great.
It was a bloodbath. So
it's always kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they were always involved in sports. They maintained good GPAs. They did fine.
Yeah.
In school, and they did really well. They, all those kids excelled in what they were doing.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be a common denominator for great athletes as far as academics. Some were real schleps, and some were just like Bill Bradley was a basketball player. He went to Princeton, you know, and he got drafted by some team in the NBA. He said, "No, I'm going to go over to Cambridge." Came back and then joined the NBA and was successful. I mean, and then he became a senator. I mean, the guy's golden, but there's just as many stories of, you know, barely got through college, if didn't get cheated for, and here they are in the pros, and they're dumb as a rock, but they can carry the rock like no other, and they can blast right through the line. It's like, we're going to do anything we can to keep this guy around. It's really
I had a student and his parents had all their bets on their kid.
Yeah.
And they would rescue that kid out of everything. They would, you know, the kid, I don't know what was wrong with the student. The student just couldn't figure it out. He couldn't figure out life.
He just couldn't do the right thing at the right time.
Running back. He did really well for the team. The problem was drugs. The problem was just doing stupid stuff constantly. Mm-hmm. And the kid would not do his work. He was highly trained at manipulation. The father would come in and talk to me. The mother would pop in and talk to me. And I'd say, I can't give him anything because he hasn't given me anything, and I keep asking him for it. And they would support their kid, as any parent would, but the problem is that they were not pushing their kid to do better and to try to – they needed to guide him
It was almost like he was the promised son.
Yes.
You know, hey – don't worry about high school algebra. He's got bigger things coming.
But right.
He wasn't taking care of what he needed to take care of. And so he learned that, I'm going to be awesome someday, so I don't have to do anything. So he did nothing and therefore was never awesome one day.
And unfortunately, I was a player in that manipulation because I didn't realize what I had walked into. And so after a great deal of deliberating with my peers and trying to take care of things, I decided that I was going to stand up and I was going to give this person a chance. And I got kicked in the teeth for it in so many ways. But that student did not make it with us. They went to another school. They did not make it there either. But I heard that they did graduate. Now, how they graduated, I don't know, because they did not, they barely had enough credits to make it into our program, because they had to have junior credits in order to make it into our program. And he was a senior when he came in, but he needed his junior year finished.
Yeah.
But he graduated, and the parents had a deal with another university or college for him to play football, because they were under the impression that once he made it into any division, he would be picked up by the talent scouts.
Yeah, sure.
And I have never heard his name since.
No, you won't probably either. Yeah.
So that's a tearjerker of a story, really. I mean, if you think about it, because
it's not,
they lived in poverty.
It's not unusual.
Well, they were impoverished, and this was their hope that this is what was going to happen. But
it's gotten different too. If you play some of the major, I know, and if you play basketball for the NCAA, if your likeness is on a game, or, you know, I mean, football guy, Heisman Trophy winner from USC, can't remember his name, don't want to remember it. I'm an Oregon fan. Anyway, he did Dr. Pepper ads. And that's legal now, because before, if his name was mentioned, the university got all the money and everything, and he got like nada.
Yeah.
And so you get to college and start making money big time if you're that good, which just makes it worse. It's delusional. You're not. So we know of one person that made it into the pros, and he's very good at what he does.
Extreme.
But we also know the family.
Yes.
And, you know, so he was a kid who worked hard at everything he did, and he was damn good at playing baseball. He was a baseball player.
But the family had huge expectations. They weren't going to let him get away with anything. And so,
right. And
but
he comes
from a
family that coaches baseball. No, they weren't. I mean, he was mentored and taught by, you know, his family to be, you know, a good human being, a decent, hardworking dude. And that's exactly what he does. And it paid off. Now, he's really unusual, because God came down from the heavens and presented him with the gifts of 5 tools for baseball. I don't think he's as fast, but he's everything else. You know, he's an amazing baseball player. He's meant to play the game, but he worked hard. Really, he went to college 4 years, got a degree, did that. I did it without playing Division I football or baseball. He played both. He played 1 year football. But it's like, he did it the hard way, you know, earned every damn day of it. And
but
he also
had a genetic blessing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The gods blessed him.
I mean, sports.
He was exemplary at his position by the time he was like 12, you know. It was just refining it from there. Some people are that way. LeBron James is one of those,
but
you know, just born to play basketball.
But I believe that if you have people who understand how to focus what you have.
Right.
And they make you accountable for being at point A when you're supposed to be at point A and point B when you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it's not a form of bullying, but it's a form of holding people accountable. And there are different ways of doing it. And just ensuring that you understand what it is that you are doing. But he's not doing it because his family needed him to do it.
He's doing it because he loves it. That's the thing.
His mom looked at me and said, I have such a wonderful child.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I have one too. I got a son like that too. He doesn't play at a pro level, but he's just a good dude. He just works at it and he understands it and he's level-headed. And I was thinking about that too. I hate to say this, but in alternative ed, we kind of get the kids that are a little off the course. They're not so adept and disciplined. And, you know, they don't have a vision of the future like that. So maybe that's the nature of the beast, is the regular high schools kind of have that. And the alternative ed high schools really never, hardly ever have the kid that's that focused. Otherwise, they'd be doing it.
But you know what?
Yeah.
What we have in alternative programs is we have the opportunity to teach kids different outlets for them to take out a lot of, let's call it, unfocused aggression or frustration or something.
Energy.
Yes. And just kind of let that energy out. Yeah. Now, whether or not it's doing sprints, whether or not it's going jogging, maybe it's just going for a walk. Maybe it's just like punching as you're walking. Maybe it's doing aerobics. Maybe it's doing something. But they need a physical outlet.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that if you listen to the third episode, I believe it is, where I'm interviewing Jennifer Achari from Perth, Australia, and we're talking about trauma, her high school, in the afternoon, they're doing something. They have an outlet. They're either doing something artistic. They go for a bike ride. They're doing something active because it helps the kids process. It also helps them with their, just to get rid of all that excess energy.
And you might be planting a seed. You know, I had a climbing wall I was fortunate to have at my beck and call for a while. And I got kids climbing, and a couple of those kids are continuing to climb and do other stuff.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
It really planted the seed for the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of them is just, he's crazy. He's like a parachutist and a wingsuiter. And yeah. So maybe I shouldn't have planted that seed. But
I did have a student who came to me at one point and he said, you know, I just cannot sleep. And this is when I was doing academic therapy. And he said, I have a terrible time getting to sleep. And I said, well, when do you release your excess energy? And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, do you go running? Do you go walking? Do you do anything physical? And he said, well, no. And I said, well, how do you get home? And he said, well, I take the school bus, which is in an upcoming episode where we talk about busing, transportation. And I said, what would happen if you got off one or two stops early and just walked home? And he said, I don't know. I said, okay. 3 days later, I have an angry phone call. We need to talk. It's from his counselor. But I don't know it's about him. I walk in, and the counselor and the mother are both sitting there looking at me saying, how dare you? And I said, how dare I what? And they said, my son told me that you told him to get off the bus earlier. I said, no, I simply suggested it, that maybe he could go for a walk and maybe that would be an easy way for him to do it. Well, because you told him to do that, which I had just disavowed, right? Because so it tells me that they didn't have their little listening ears on.
That's true.
He walked up, he saw a house, and he decided to go up there and apologize to them for toilet papering their house some years earlier. And I said,
okay,
wow, good for him.
Right.
That must have, that took some courage to do that. And good for him for being honorable. No, because now they may come after us with a lawsuit. And I thought, I would be proud of your son for doing something like that. And toilet papering somebody's house is, how is that going to take you to court? I mean, it's prankish, but he didn't destroy anything.
Right. Not like he set it on fire. The toilet paper just sat there and rotted.
So sometimes we have to be careful because some people are just a little disinclined to take accountability because we don't know what the outcomes of what we suggest might be.
I got stories. Yeah.
But you know, I still think that is a funny story and I still can't get over how it's my fault. that he did something. I'm still proud of him.
Oh, I would be too. I mean, whatever happens, you know, it's accountability. You got to accept the consequences. And there it is.
Right.
You know?
But we want our students to have, we want our students to have that outlet. Now, in Portland Public, they used to have a CrossFit program. And, but what happened was they ended up, and this is, now if I'm wrong, let me know. It was undermined because a person came into, let's just say a person came into a position where they looked at it and said, no more of this. Even though they were getting far more participation from the female side and the male side, there was an upswing and it was working and it was dynamic and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
But then they were told, no, can't do that anymore. Can't use that
legal
anymore.
Liability.
They couldn't call it CrossFit anymore because CrossFit
it's registered
wasn't going
trademark.
To allow them. So they were going with the functional fitness. But then they were also told no because of all the misinformation and disinformation that says that CrossFit is dangerous when it's not. It teaches you how to do things so that you don't get injured. And it allows people to become stronger. You just never know what kinds of things people are going to come up with to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is fear, and part of that is a control mechanism, I think.
That's true. And, you know, honestly, another aspect of alternative ed kids is they kind of like to forge their own path and do their own thing. And that's awful hard to do on a team.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, it's, I'm not saying generally that they're not good team members, but alt-ed kids are definitely mostly individuals. Yeah, they're some very flamboyant. Not that there isn't any other place, but very kind of sometimes flamboyant and cool personalities you're dealing with. So,
oh, that's true. That's true. And we did not talk about the LGBTQ.
We didn't.
Plus.
And that was one of
community
the things that they did
and sports,
say.
Yeah, but I think that's
was very underrepresented.
That's a whole nother episode, I think.
That is. That's a whole kind of, I don't know, maybe it's more editorial than it is educational. And
well, no, I think it's educational. I think we can bring it up.
Yeah.
And I think we should. At a later
I'm just
date.
Saying it tends to be a little controversial and things. And it's just, the fact is there have been exemplary gay athletes forever. We just mm-hmm. they just shouldn't say, hey, I'm gay, by the way. Some did, but most didn't. Yeah. Right. So it's like, so.
Yep. So, okay. So let's wind it up.
Yeah. What our conclusion was is, well, we couldn't really draw a conclusion between alternative ed involvement in high school sports or club sports, but, it tends to follow the same demography as alt-ed kids anyway. And a lot of alt-ed programs just don't have teams. They have maybe debate teams, maybe a little club or two, but they generally don't field a football, basketball, or softball team. So,
no, they would, as you said, I think that they do, well, they do soccer and boxing.
There is that. We talked about, there's a little club mm-hmm. there that might work. But wasn't the boxing sort of extracurricular?
It was extracurricular.
They just kind of meeting at the gym.
But that would be a club sport in a sense, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be. Yeah, definitely. That's hardcore. A lot of jiu-jitsu going around. A lot of people doing the jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and people do karate and Muay Thai and all the other Brazilian.
Yeah, there it is. If that's an individual sport, maybe playing with a dojo or a team, performing with them, but you're actually an individual who competes. Yeah, there you go. Who knows?
Okay. So thank you, Philip, for taking us down this path.
It was a little interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in a while.
Yeah, it was great. No, I really appreciate it.
I just wanted to close with this one line. For parents who think that they're elementary school age son or daughter is going to be a pro someday. I heard from a very renowned Oregon baseball coach many championships under his belt, he said, there's nothing more unimportant than a 12-year-old phenom. I was at first shocked to hear him say that. And as the years go by, I go, oh, so true.
But I think that parents have it in their heart that it could be.
It could be until their son stops growing at 5'3" and they wanted to be a center.
Yes.
That's things true. Like that happen, you know, they just go, I don't want to do this anymore, Mom. It's like, what? We spent 8 years since you're like 4 doing this. Yeah, yeah. I'm done. What? It's weird. Yeah, you never know.
I hear you. Okay. So
it's been good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Aloha.
And next everybody. Week, we will come to you with something about school transportation agendas, blurred lines.
Yeah, some blurred lines there, I found.
Yeah. So thank you.
Tune in and we'll tell you what those are.
So keep and your how blurry feet on the ground they can be while you reach for the stars, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Aloha.